Biologists spend years mapping Chilkat Valley goat and bear habitat to inform heliskiing decisions. And we take a look back at the commercial gill netting season. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Emily Files. Those stories up next. Every few years, Haines officials decide whether to allow helicopter skiing in new areas of the Chilkat Valley. It's usually a contentious process where residents debate the economic benefits of heliskiing versus impacts on residents and wildlife. Now, local decision makers will have concrete wildlife data to use when developing heliski policy. State biologists created models to predict whether a given area is critical mountain goat or brown bear habitat. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologists who did this research want to be clear on one thing. These studies are not about whether helicopters disturb wildlife. That research has already been done, and it shows mountain goats and bears are affected by helicopter noise, and the disturbance happens during the winter, the most precarious time of the year for wildlife.
If animals are right on the edge already, any amount of disturbance or displacement may actually have some meaningful effects on the animal's reproduction or survival.
That's biologist Kevin White. He started this research in 2010, so his department would have more definitive information when weighing in on Haines heliskiing decisions. The goal was to create a map of Chilkat Valley mountain goat habitat.
You can see that mountain goats have a really specific preference for certain places on the landscape. They definitely aren't using the landscape at random.
White spoke to Haines residents in September. He showed how he tracked critical winter goat habitat on area mountain ranges. He put GPS collars on about 70 animals and conducted aerial surveys. Chilkat Valley mountain goats show lots of variety in where they spend the winter. That's because the climate here is transitional between coastal and interior. Climate affects mountain snowpack. Goats will go to higher elevations if the snow is light and easy to forage in. If the snow is heavy and hard to move through, goats go to lower elevations.
So just within the Haines area, we see animals exhibiting three different wintering strategies.
White found that 25% of area goats winter at high elevations, 34% at medium elevations, and 41% at low elevations. Using the location data he collected, White came up with a model you can use to predict whether a certain area is likely winter goat habitat.
And then ultimately, we can predict across the landscape where mountain goat habitat is. We can overlay on top of that proposed helicopter or land management zones to be able to determine what kind of impact that might have on mountain goats.
Mountain goats aren't the only animals living in places also used as local heliski terrain. Brown bears create winter dens high in the Chilkat Valley Mountains. In 2015, wildlife biologist Anthony Krupe started a study of brown bear denning sites in the Haines area. The study consisted mostly of aerial surveys. Krupe says if bears are disturbed while hibernating, it can have serious consequences on their survival.
They basically go into a den and shut down most of their bodily functions. Disturbance during this time period has the potential for a large energetic effect.
Krupe spotted 90 dens in the mountains between Haines and the Canadian border. Most of them fell between 1,500 and 3,500 feet. The mean elevation was 2,500 feet.
Bears are very specific to where they locate their dens.
He used those data points to develop a model that predicts bear denning habitat. Then he mapped the high probability den habitat and compared that to currently permitted heliski areas. 27% of dens were in heliski areas. Krupe looked at helicopter GPS data from 2011 and found that 15% of prime denning habitat overlaps areas with intense helicopter activity. So there are definitely areas where heliskiing and wildlife overlap. Here's White.
And those are places where the hardest decisions need to be made. Those are places that have the highest conservation concern.
And those decisions are going to be up to the Haines Assembly. Earlier this year, efforts to review map amendment requests were derailed by conflict of interest concerns and the fact that these wildlife studies weren't yet complete. Now the Assembly is holding hearings on a new process to review proposed Heliski map changes. It will send the requests to two committees first and get input from agencies like Fish and Game. Fish and Game will use these newly minted habitat models in its feedback. But how heavily to weigh wildlife habitat in map decisions is ultimately up to the six elected officials on the Haines Assembly. The 2017 commercial gillnetting season is over in Southeast. Disappointing sockeye numbers persisted in the Upper Lynn Canal throughout the summer, but a particularly strong run of hatchery chum saved the season. KHNS's Abby Collins spoke with Alaska Department of Fish and Game biologist Mark Soggy about the outcome of the 2017 season.
The Chinook are a problem, but I tried as best I could to manage to really be restrictive on that and still have a successful chum fishery down below. And we did minimize our harvest of wild stocks, though we still caught 1,100 Chinook, but not Chilcat Chinook. The other stocks did well, fairly well anyway. I mean, Chilcoot was a real touch and go because of fish just didn't come back like we expected them to. So we ended up with 43,000 up there, which is good, but not where I think is the most productive level for the lake, which is around 60 or 70,000. On Chilcat, we end up with 90,000 and the fish were still coming in. Last day of count was 1,100 fish, so the fish wheels showed that there's a lot of sockeye still in the river. So I think we won't have any idea what the final count is, but I'm sure it'd be 100,000 or so.
The commercial harvest of sockeye was pretty consistently low throughout the summer.
It was, and a lot of that's due to Chilcoot just not coming in. We just didn't have those fish come back to the numbers that we wanted them to, and or that we expected that they would. And so, yeah, we had to be very restrictive. And successfully, at least we made the minimum goal, a little over, which is 38. So we made 5,000 fish over, which is too close a margin, really.
How does this year compare to recent years in that sense?
Well, the sockeye harvest is low, obviously, for a total. Taking out the hatchery fish, which did really well this year, our chum salmon escapement looks to be like 130,000, maybe. Though I flew it yesterday and I sure didn't see as many fish up there than I like to see. Our chum harvest was about, right around the average, actually very, very close, about 68,000, I think, and which is historically, I mean, the 10-year average, it's right on average, but in terms of what the Chilcat should be able to produce, way below what it has historically. The coho harvest was about 30,000, and that's close, that's below average.
You mentioned the hatchery chum. What do you think this season would have looked like for our commercial fleet if it weren't for those hatchery fish?
I think most people would have had to leave, actually. We just didn't have the sockeye to really make a living on, and the chum harvest here in the fall is not that great. You take out 1.5 million chum salmon at 80 cents a pound, and that's a lot of money and a big income for the commercial fleet locally.
Coming off of this season, is there anything that is on your mind as a management biologist, things you're thinking about in terms of management?
I think we just have to keep shooting for what we did this year, just try and get the lakes loaded up with enough fish so that they come back, but not over-escape them. That was a real lesson to me this year, if that's what's happening. I mean, we're not absolutely sure that it was over-escapement that drove the sockeye return being so weak. It could have been ocean conditions. Yes, humans were sort of manipulating the entire ecosystem by pumping out all these chum salmon. We're putting out millions upon millions upon millions of fish. We don't really know the effect of that. And also, there's other factors going on with climate change. And we had a huge warming area of the North Pacific, which changes the ecology of the lake, of the ocean. And all those factors contribute to a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah. Any final thoughts for the last fish report of the season?
Yeah, I think, basically, I mean, I flew yesterday, and it was just as I was flying around up the upper Chilcat and the upper Klehini and just looking for fish. To me, it was like the interconnectedness and the health of all of that ecosystem up there is surprisingly fragile. We have to make sure that, you know, since this is the side that we can control and we can have some input on, that we need to protect the water quality, basically, of the entire Chilkat and Killeen Valley. So that has to be kept to the highest standards, or things will get will just go down slowly, as they have down south. You lose the habitat and you lose the fish returns, and then you become dependent on something like the hatchery run, which is has a history of not lasting. The natural habitat, I think, is that's what I would like to focus on. I think that's really important.
That was Fish and Game's Mark Soggy talking with Abby Collins. For KHNS News, I'm Emily Files. Thanks for joining us this evening.